welcome to our first podcast. We are so excited that you are here today listening to us. What I want you to do is, if you're at home and you're in your pajamas, stay there. Get comfortable, right? Get your favorite donuts. Get your pizza. Just enjoy yourself. Also, if you're at school and you're walking through the hallways, put it on. Get excited. But make sure you take it off before the teacher sees. We are here to let you know that you matter, that your heart matters, and that your life matters. We're going to have fun conversation. As we speak, if you hear us talk about God and you, right away you think, well, I don't really know him. He's not a part of my life. Don't turn us off. Because maybe through this journey we go through today on this podcast, you might find something that can help you get through your wonderful life. So we're going to start with Beth. She's going to tell you who she is and things that she likes. And remember this, you matter so much, and thank you so much for listening.
Hi, my name is Beth, and I'm just really happy to be doing this podcast with my friends, Tracy and Steph. I'm a middle-aged woman, and but I don't look it, and no, I'm kidding, but I have a husband who is awesome, and he's a pastor at a church, and I happen to lead worship at that church. No nepotism at all. I mean, he really hired me because of my ability. And I have three children who are 16, 14, and my youngest will be 13 on Wednesday. So, I will have three teenagers in the house, and I'm slightly dying over that. But I love white fluffy clouds, and I like talking into a microphone. Here we go. I take pictures of clouds.
Do you really?
Yeah, I nearly wreck a lot.
It's pretty
bad.
I
pull over on the side of the road and take a picture of the sky. That's just fascinating to me.
Really?
Yes, it's okay. Beautiful. We need to look up more, people.
I agree.
But not crash. Look up and not crash.
Pull over and then look up.
Yes.
So, Beth, can you share with us maybe some things that you might struggle with being a mom, since that is the forefront of your mind, and also being a mom in your 40s? And how God has helped you to get through it. You said it. You said middle age. You took it off.
No, I'm kidding. I'm 45.
You said it.
I don't care. I wear it like a badge.
Me too. I made it still, baby. Bring it on.
Yes. What I struggle with, well, I'm just in a different stage now that I have these teenagers. And I think I saw something on the internet the other day. It was like, I'm just trying my best not to produce children who are buttholes, basically. And I mean, that's maybe a little harsh wording. It actually was much harsher on the meme. But when I was younger and I had small children, it was so exhausting because all of your energy went towards just keeping them alive on a daily basis. I mean, there was all this wrangling. My kids were 3.5, 1.5, and newborn. Like that went by the time Lincoln was born, Abby was only 3.5 years old, and so they were very close together. We had a very active lifestyle and just busy, and it was just constantly, you know, keeping them healthy, keeping them alive, keeping them from killing each other, and that was hard. And trying to raise them and teach them and everything. So now they're teenagers. It's just a whole nother, you've traded all that exhaustion from wrangling them to real problems, like real issues, and you know, things like bullying, things like making good decisions, you know, what they're looking at on the internet, just things like that. And so everything's more serious. And so I think it's easier, this might sound weird to say, but I think it's easier to raise my boys than it is to raise my daughter. And now understand, I love my daughter. She is absolutely wonderful. She's the best child, the best girl in the world. I don't deserve her. But to me, it's easier to raise her easier to raise the boys because I feel like it's easier to be a guy in this world. Men are just more readily accepted as they are. And so I'm teaching them to be kind. I'm teaching them to be strong, to respect other people. And then with her, I just feel like everything's hazy. Everything's blurry. You know, I'm walking a tightrope of do I say to her, oh, you might want to fix your hair before you go out the door, or oh, you might want to change your clothes, or maybe put on a little makeup. And all the while I'm saying to myself, shut up, don't say that to her. That's not what is important. What's important is what's inside her heart, which is beautiful and wonderful and exquisite. She's unique. She's kind. She's compassionate. She loves Jesus. She's a go-getter. She's incredibly smart. But yet I know that how people perceive women is by what they see, mm-hmm. first and foremost. That makes their decision on if they even want to get to know someone, mm-hmm. is what does this woman look like? And now she's absolutely gorgeous, but I just struggle with, as a mom, you know, what do I tell her? Do I tell her fix your hair, or do I tell her, you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so it's hard. And so I struggle with, am I sending my children into therapy? You know, are they going to turn out okay? Or are they going to resent so many things?
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So when you think about your daughter and she's going to school and you put some of your insecurities, not that you're insecure, mm-hmm, but the things mm-hmm. that you think she might right. be insecure on, and then you send her to school, has she ever had issues that you've had to help her with?
Oh, absolutely. And I think where it comes from with me is I'm trying to, you know, like I think back on times growing up, like maybe if I was made fun of for something, or and how bad that stung and how that hurt. And so I'm always looking at her and looking her over and saying, is there anything that somebody could make fun of her for? And can I help her avoid that? So that's where I think my motive comes from. But it's so hard because that may not be the case at all. And then I've put something on her that didn't need to be there. I've given her maybe a fear. I've given her incompetence in something. So that's just what I struggle with. I'm like, do I just leave her alone? And maybe she has to go through certain
that's
things.
That's real, though.
And
it's so
yeah.
real.
Mm-hmm.
So you're afraid if you bring it up, like my son, I'll say, please put deodorant on. You smell horrible.
Yeah.
Kids are going to make fun of you. I say that to him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I say that to my boys.
And he doesn't
sure.
even care. Uh-huh. But saying that to a girl, it might crush her.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. I don't want to crush her spirit.
Right.
I don't want to crush her spirit.
You don't want
right.
to say, babe, that top doesn't look super great on you. You can't
right.
say that to her. She'll mm-hmm. cry because you're mm-hmm. mom and
yes.
she wants you to think she's awesome.
Right.
That's a fine line. That's an uncomfortable line.
It's hard. And I still don't have it figured out. I mean, I still mess up on this a lot.
That's because you're
a human.
And
she's still great.
Mm-hmm. And she is.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
And people come to me and they're like, your daughter is so great. How did you do this? And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. It's the grace of God. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to say, yeah, I've done a few things right. But by and large, I just feel like it's the grace of God that she has turned out as well as she has.
How did you introduce your kids to knowing God? Just because I know that you're a pastor's wife and mm-hmm. you love God too and you work in the church. But did you let them fall in love with him by your teachings? Did they come up to you and say, Mom, today I want to be saved? Or did they just get saved younger? Or did you let that
they
be their choice?
They were all very young. They were all very young, but they made the decision and we really fought them on it. Like, Abby was 5, I think, when she got baptized and saved and baptized. Luke was probably around that same age, 6 or so. Lincoln was the oddball because he, even though he was that young when he told us that he was going to get saved and he wanted to make Jesus Lord of his life, he now has come back to us and said, I want to get baptized again. I feel mm-hmm. like I'm more mature in my faith. I feel like I've really got a grasp on it. I'm making it more personal. And so he's been the tough nut to crack, which is so funny. But I think Abby really literally just came out of the womb with like this anointing on her.
Yeah,
I mean,
agree.
She was
she just came
yes. out so
she's like you.
She came out in tune with God and just so in saying things even at a young age, just so spiritual and so beautiful. Like you knew that she had been in the presence of God. She would write songs when she was 3. She would just write these songs that I was like, oh my gosh, like you need to make that a real song. And then Luke is real funny because he's just very decisive. He is very quiet. Still waters run deep. He won't say much, But then suddenly he would just come to us and say, I'm ready to be a Christian.
Seriously? How old was he?
He was six, I think. Wow. I think he was 5 or 6. Yeah.
And see, I love that you let them make their own decision, because you and I know that it has to be their own decision.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, obviously you hope and you dream, because I'm a Christian, you hope and dream when you have children that they would grow up to love and serve the Lord. But you can't force that, because then that's not their decision and it won't stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It won't stick.
Yeah, my kids were teenagers before they knew the Lord, and I loved God. And
well, my kids really didn't have much of a fighting chance, because literally when they were born, we had planted a church in Gallatin, and that's all we did. I mean, and one of my major prayers was, please God, don't let my children grow up to hate ministry.
Yes.
Because that was our life. We did it 24 hours a day almost. And when you're starting a church from scratch, it's all consuming. It's exhausting. You can't ever let up. You can't ever let up until it gets, you know, grows a little bit. And so we didn't take a Sabbath. We didn't take time with our family very much. And we just had to just pray that God's grace would be on them. And I mean, just daily, I would say, Lord, please don't let them hate you. Don't let them hate ministry, because we're, you know, giving so much to this endeavor and to the kingdom right now. And thank the Lord, they don't. I mean, all three of my kids serve in the church right now. And even the boys, you know, they do things. They help with the children's church. They, you know, so for now, I'm very thankful.
But what about you? How did you know God? How did you get to know God?
Well,
the whole story, all the bad stuff.
Okay. You know, it's funny, because I knew that we did not go to church a lot growing up. And my mom was raised in church big time. My dad, I think, went occasionally. I knew that God was very important. They would teach me things like, you know, praying at night, saying your prayers before you went to bed, things like that. But we did not regularly attend when I was a really little girl. But I remember laying in bed at night. We still lived in this apartment. It was before we even moved into our home. And I've always struggled with sleep my whole life, like just not sleeping well. And so I remember laying in bed, and I had a younger brother and two older sisters. We had a really full house, and everybody was asleep. And I was just laying in bed, and I sensed the presence of God. Wow. Like, I knew that he was real. I don't know. I just knew that I knew that I knew. I didn't know a lot about him because I was so young, but I just knew that there was a God, and I knew that he was real, and I just wanted to know him more. So as I grew up, and finally we did find a church that we loved, and we started going to that church. I got baptized on Easter. I think it's a funny story, because there was a guy that I had a crush on in fifth grade, and I knew that his mother, if he ever like asked a girl to go with him, like quotation marks, go with him, that she would call them and quiz them about their love for Jesus. And I really liked him. And so I thought, well, I need to take care of business before she calls me. Isn't that crazy?
That's so funny.
It was because of almost like a spiritual jealousy. Like, you know, like I didn't want to be caught. You know,
can I go back to that one part? Because I think we might have some kids who don't know God, like you said, and you weren't at church when you laid in your bed. So you were laying in your bed.
Yeah.
So if we have any students and whose parents, like you said, your mom was 100% in, but you didn't always go, and you're a little girl and you felt the presence of God. How was that even possible? Help me understand that.
I wish I could explain it.
And that's what you wanted.
Well,
maybe somebody had been praying for you.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, and when I say, it's hard for me to say, like, my mom and dad didn't take me to church all the time. I mean, I don't even know what the circumstances are, but literally God was such a huge part of our life. Seriously, like, and my whole family. My mom came from a huge family, and they all were all about, you know, church. They sang in church, all this stuff. So we eventually ended up going very, very regularly. But when I was a very small child, I can't explain it. It's intangible, Stephanie, because you literally just have to know. It's just sensing his presence, and because he's God and he's holy, when you are in the midst of the presence of God, you know it's God, because he's incomparable. There's no one else like him. You can't confuse that for anything else. That's the only way I can explain it.
That's absolutely fantastic. So you're meeting, I mean, amazing. So we can speak to the young kids that maybe their parents, and your parents obviously went to church and 100%, but some of them don't. that God can reach out and find them, even in
yes,
their bedroom.
He wants to reach out and find them.
Because
he knows them. Uh-huh. That's what's so great.
Because he made them. And I think that's what's so beautiful about that truth you said, is that he found you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a preacher didn't come into your room that day, and maybe you didn't go to Bible class that night or whatever, but God found you because he cared about you, and he had a plan for you. He had a dream for you. So go back to the boyfriend. That is fantastic.
I don't even think he ended up being my boyfriend.
But just in case,
I was going to be ready. And well, I just knew that's who I wanted to be. And I guess I had just never thought about taking the official step. And I was like, I can't lie to this lady. If she calls, I can't go into this big explanation of how well I've always sensed God's presence in my life, but I've never, you know. And so I told my mom, I was like, I'm ready to be a Christian. And the pastor came to our house, and he talked to me and quizzed me about it. Are you serious about this? This is a very serious step. And I was like, yes, sir. And so they prayed with me. And then that following Sunday, I got baptized. And then here's the really funny part. You know, you think of everybody having this big emotional decision where they walk up to the front of the church and they lay their life down on the altar and Jesus saved me. And so that night, I'd gotten baptized that morning. And that night, they did an Easter production at my church. And my pastor at the time, he was really handsome man. And he had these blue eyes and longish hair. Well, he walked down the aisle carrying this old rugged cross, and he was Jesus going to the crucifixion, and everybody's crying, and that's when the emotion happened. And so, and I remember them asking, does anybody in here, you know, do you want to get saved or whatever? And I raised my hand, and I had just gotten baptized that morning. But to me, it was like, I was just, you know, it was okay, because I was just saying, like, oh man, do I ever believe this? Do I ever want in on this? I mean, I did it a little backwards.
The funny part is that she said the pastor was very handsome.
Yes. I love that part.
He's still alive, so I hope he doesn't hear this.
That was wonderful. But Beth, I think your walk to salvation is so incredible, because you were in your room, you knew you wanted something, but then you wanted a boyfriend. And come on, how many girls don't do that?
Yeah.
To change, why not alter your life for Christ to have a boyfriend?
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. That's brilliant.
That's crafty.
Brilliant. So after you got saved, did you like dive right into God's word? Did you have some struggles? You were how old when you got saved? 13, you
11.
Said? 11. What happened after that?
Well, we just continued to go. Actually, this is a longer story than we want to get into, but right after that, our church split. And we ended up going to one of those storefronts and having church there. And at that point is when my parents really got more committed to going every Sunday, because it was more important. It was like, you know, we had to rally. And so, you know, it was a very small church. And I come from a small town. And so I didn't grow up in your traditional, oh, I had this awesome youth group to go to, and we went to youth camp and we did this. I didn't really have a youth group. I mean, on and off a little bit, but a lot of it was the pastor's kids. He had four daughters, and you know, just people that they were friends with. I wasn't really super close friends with them because I was a lot younger. So I didn't grow up. Aaron and I just have this very different background. When he found out that I'd never gone to youth camp growing up, he was like, "What?" But I didn't. I mean, I did not have that same experience. So I really had to fight for the making that personal and really owning it on my own.
Which takes a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
When you're
yeah.
a teenager, you'd rather have a youth group you can just jump into
yeah.
and help you out. But what I like about it is that there's some kids who don't go to youth group, and if it's you, and we want you to try to find a youth group, but you can walk your walk with Christ. Sometimes you have to do it alone, and you can do it, and you can be successful. So what kind of tools can you give kids if they feel like they don't have any place they can go? Their parents don't serve Christ. They're not interested in the Lord. What kind of tools?
Well, nowadays, you do have so many things at your fingertips. You can go to FCA, or you can...
Oh, yeah, at school.
Yeah, at school. You can find anything. You can get on YouVersion app. You can download the Holy Bible app on your phone, and there are devotionals on there that my kids do and love them. Lincoln won't even go to bed at night without doing his devotion mm-hmm. and praying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you don't have to have this super cool youth group that does all these trips and all of that. You own your salvation. Like, you have to take responsibility for it. And your walk with Jesus is yours. and it doesn't belong to anybody else. And so you have to fight for that, and you have to make it happen. Nobody can force that on you.
That's good. That's really good. So Tracy, what kind of struggles have you been struggling with? And let's talk about you.
My name is Tracy, and I have been married 25 years to an amazing man. And I have three amazing kiddos who are out of the house now, but not really. I should say they're graduated. And they are 24, 20, and 18. So they're old. And I poured everything that I had into them. They were my life. And that was my goal for, you know, however long I had them, which was too short, by the way, was to pour my whole entire life into them.
So what do you do now that you're at the age that you are and your kids are gone? How do you fill up that space that once was filled up with kids?
That's a great question.
That was good.
That was real good. You need to put that on a plaque or something.
Write that down.
Because some moms struggle with that. I don't struggle with filling up space with the kids. I fill it up with Netflix and pizza and going out with my husband and being a happy place. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're gone on the weekends. See you later, alligator. But I love my kids, and I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years, but I love this time. I absolutely embrace it. Go ahead.
There are so many good things about this time, and so that's what I've been trying to focus on. I'm trying to get caught up on Gilmore Girls because, you know, I feel like that's an important thing. Yes, because the reunion's coming. But no, seriously. So I decided that I was going to start feeling really depressed and lonely because my children left me. And I was like, you know what? I just need to be all in wherever I'm at.
Yes.
And I've already been volunteering at our youth group for 3 years, 3.5 years. And so I decided, you know what? I'm not going to just get there at the end of my work day and give it, you know, half of myself.
Yes.
I'm just going to be all in. And really just changing my attitude and changing my focus was a very big deal. Mm. So I do that. I volunteer in our youth group.
They're so lucky to have you.
Thank you.
How did you change your attitude and your focus?
How did I do that? I made a choice. We make it really hard.
So powerful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I made a choice. And I think I just kind of had a light bulb go off. It was one of those things where, gosh, I'm dragging. I don't feel like I'm making a difference at youth groups, you know? I don't feel like what I have to contribute is really making a difference.
Lies.
And so I really feel like as the person that I am, I've had a lot of fear. I've been afraid of a lot of things. And I could tell you stories about from when I was a child even, where I wouldn't even step on someone's lawn because I was afraid they'd come out and yell at me. And that was a big deal to me. And so,
are you serious?
I'm serious.
I would tolerate their house.
I can remember walking to school being very careful not to go into people's lawns. I mean, that's so strange.
Why, had someone yelled at you?
I just never wanted to be in trouble. I never wanted to be yelled at. That was devastating for me.
Yeah.
I wanted to be perfect.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. So on that topic, this has been bothering me that I've been recognizing that I'm just getting afraid about stuff that I really should not be getting afraid about. And so I decided to do a little bit of research. And I'm one of those people where I didn't go to college, and that really bothers me. Mm-hmm. And so to compensate for that, I try to research. And so I read a lot. And I'm not going to tell you how much, because I probably don't read half as much as some people. But we're not here to compare. That's not what we're doing here. So I found it very interesting. I did, I looked at the Harvard Medical School, some journals on there, and they actually have done studies on fear. And they found that anxiety disorders are twice as high in women as they are in men.
I believe it.
I know it. And one of the things that they...
How unfair.
Oh, I know. It's not fair at all. I don't like it at all. And not that I'm going to, you know, give into that or whatever, but real. It's just real.
You recognize it.
I do. I recognize it. Yeah. Yes. Because I noticed because I'll talk to my husband or I'll talk to my boys and I'll talk to my daughter. And I'm like, do you guys struggle with this? Is this a big, no, we don't struggle with that. You know, it's totally me. And so one of the things that they found, and this is just one study and it's not, you know, it's not written in stone or whatever, but they said that women with higher estrogen levels were good at extinguishing fear. And they were good at extinguishing fear like a man is good at extinguishing fear. So the way that they can think through that and come to the realization that, wait a minute here, you know, it's really, you know, it's how they combat it, I guess. Right. And so it was kind of the same level. So I know earlier we were talking about, you know, I wonder what time in our lives that happens.
Yeah.
And I think as women, as we start to get older, us middle-aged women, we're starting to lose some of that estrogen that we've had in our body.
So we're going to be afraid more?
So we combat it more.
Oh, boy.
Have you not noticed any of that?
No.
Like, have you noticed being afraid of certain things?
Still, baby.
See,
more
I'm
still?
The opposite.
Not at all.
I'm the opposite. I feel like
Me too.
I don't give a rip what
Me too.
Think.
I don't care.
Less than ever.
No, I...
Me too. Best thing you said, less than ever. Me too, less than ever.
No, well, every I find year that, I live, I'm like...
I'm less
certain
fearful.
Things, yes. Yes, certain things. Oh, yeah, totally. I'm like, who cares? I don't care. But then other things...
specific things.
Yes.
Okay.
Then other things, I just become this... anxiety ball.
Give us an example. I want an example.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, what's a good example?
Just lay it on the line.
Well, it's really a lot to do with people. It's okay. A lot to do with people. And so I am afraid of what people are going to think that, you know, or people are going to say.
Because about what?
Because about me or about my family.
Oh.
Like, I don't ever want anybody to think my children are less than whatever, you know, like I struggle with that. I want my kids to come across, you know, and I've never, yes. And I've never put that on them. It's only been in my own head. So that's a good thing. But yeah, so
that is a good thing, yeah.
That's a good example. What is a good example? Just, I don't know.
But like when you say you're afraid of what people are going to think of you, do you imagine in your head what they're saying?
Yes.
Okay, so give me some examples of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're funny.
Come on. Yes, I want to know.
Okay, let's put it like this. So let's say, so my husband and I lead a small group in
yes.
our church. Let's say a couple visits, in which this has happened. People come and visit, and they sit in. Let's say the next week they don't come back. Okay, so then,
Then
I'm like, oh my gosh, what did we do wrong?
Okay,
were they offended by something I said? You know, was our food not great enough? Do you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
It's just silly stuff like that. I know we have great food, so it can't be that. You know, but you start to like get on yourself as a leader. When I was a worship leader, you have the Monday blues. Did I sing the right things? Did I say the right things?
Mm-hmm,
you know, it's like, you know, how buyer's remorse.
Yes.
When you buy a new car,
it's
like worship leader's remorse. You know, the next day you're hashing out. And I think that's what I do.
Depression.
I overthink. I totally overthink. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there ways you think, ladies, that when we do these things, because everyone suffers from this, and maybe some of you don't, that we can overcome it and be overcame. Like, you ever want to be overcome something and not constantly overcoming it?
Yes.
When am I going to have victory?
Mm-hmm.
God?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
A book that I'm reading right now, and I'm reading it very slowly because it's kicking my tail, is it's called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality for Women.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written by this woman who, she and her husband, he was the pastor of a huge church in New York City, and their life was just completely out of balance. She literally resigned from his church. She left his church and started going somewhere else because she had lost her identity. She was just so wrapped up in what other people thought and trying to keep up and trying to do what people thought a good Christian girl, a good pastor's wife should do. And so she wrote this book, and he wrote the foreword in it. He's given his complete... He actually wrote the flip side to it. So there's a book out that he's written as well, several books, and I've gobbled them up because I love them. But chapter one, it was 8 things you have to do in order to become spiritually, emotionally healthy as a woman. And the number one thing was stop caring what other people think.
Yes.
And here's the way. Here's the way she described it. I wish we were videoing this. Except I look like crud today. But the way she described it was, when I am so obsessed with what other people think of me, I am replacing Jesus with them.
Oh, wow. That's great.
I'm making them my Lord and Savior. I'm saying your opinion matters more than God's opinion.
Wow.
And that hit me so hard, because I don't want to disappoint God. I don't want anybody to take his place, you know?
Yes.
And his opinion is what matters. And so that was so freeing. And really, when you think of worst case scenario, so what?
Yes.
What if
yes.
they left because they didn't agree with something you said?
Oh. Yes. Yes.
Bye, Felicia. I mean, you know, it's like, get out of here. Go find somewhere else.
Find a place that works for you. Not everyone's going to find
that. Not everyone.
Yes.
And even if they think certain things about your kids, or, you know, when we sit at church and Luke sits in service, you would think that he hates being there, because he sits there with his arms crossed, the sullen look on his face. And it used to initially for a very short amount of time, it bothered me because I was afraid that people would think, oh my gosh, this kid hates, his parents must really not be great Christians. Because see, Stephanie's like, I actually did think that. Well, and then suddenly it hit me one day. I was like, I really don't care, because I know him.
Yes,
I know his heart.
He, and that's freeing.
He loves God. That kid pursues God, but he doesn't flash it around. You know, he doesn't wear it like a billboard, because it's very personal to him. He has no need in his life to impress anyone. And I love that about him. Now, does it still bother me on a certain level? Yes, because I'm like, straighten up, kid. Sit up and look at your dad. He's preaching. Great. And, you know, and he's whatever. He's just sitting there like, but yeah.
Wouldn't you rather have that than have him being fake?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, you know what, all you people, because my goodness, we have to sit on the front row. Aaron likes for us to sit on the front row. I hate it, but he likes it. So because I love him,
I
do it.
We can watch you then.
Oh, yeah. And but I think of all, you know, all these people, and I'm like, they're probably not even looking, just Stephanie. They're probably just listening and thinking about their own walk with the Lord, you know? And so, but Stephanie's back there judging my kid. Now I know.
I love what Beth said. Beth, you're incredible. And I love what you said when you said, who cares? Because you don't mean it like to be vindictive.
Yeah.
You mean
being calloused.
I have to be free from this.
Yeah, yes. It's a freedom.
Because everyone's going to like you. And if we can accept that and say, but I'm going to be my best for God. And I love what you said. I need to make him happy. And to make him happy is to love others, to care about others, and to care about their feelings.
Yes.
But not to let their feelings and their insecurities become who you are. Because God can take care of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to love them. And I'm going to be kind to them. And I love that you said, I do love that you said about Luke. Because when I first came to CIL and a wonderful church, and I saw your son, I'm thinking, man, he's not even paying attention. Then I got to know him. That he is so wrong.
Yeah.
And it's a great example, especially when you're a worship leader and half the people are not worshiping. And you think, am I stinking? You don't stink. That's just how they do it.
That's their problem.
My husband used to say that. He'd go to church. He goes, honey, no one is doing anything. I go, how do you do it? He goes, you just got to pretend that you were awesome and they think you're great and you're doing it for God.
And if you act like you're great, they'll believe you.
That's right. Because then you'll shut down. Especially in worshiping, you will shut down.
Yes.
And who wants to shut down? I love that we have to say, who cares? Because I want to encourage every woman and young lady that sometimes you cannot be everything your friend wants.
Mm-hmm.
And if you aren't a believer in Christ, I encourage you to find him, because he's going to give you that strength to say, I can't care what you think, but I can care what he thinks, because he's changing my life. Now, Tracy, I want to go back to you. You had said something about jealousy and how that could be a seed.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that you had struggled with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you say about 80% of women probably struggle with that.
Oh, yes. Well, one of the things, I don't know if I mentioned, I think I did, that you know, I read a lot of Brené Brown stuff. And she really talks about how you have to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to believe that you're enough, and you have to stop trying to please other people and performing, because that's what happens.
Oh.
You start performing for others. And
what does that look like?
Oh, gosh.
I hate that performance trap.
Can you tell me what it looks like?
Don't you think that when we're out in public, whether it be Stephanie laying on the ground in front of me while we're recording this.
I just need to give a visual right now. Stephanie's in hot pants, high heel shoes, and a leather jacket, and she's laying on the floor right now.
It's great.
Earlier, she was prancing around behind Tracy, and she said, I'm Donald Trump, and she's Hillary Clinton. No, I'm going to say it. It was hilarious. hilarious. No, girl, you're not hiding nothing.
I didn't even get to see
you're pulling everything out of us. Don't you dare edit this out. Or don't you dare.
Oh, man.
Anyway, go ahead.
That's so great.
Hey, we're just real.
We're just being real with you. Anyway, so we try to combat not being enough by pleasing and by being perfect. And so when we're out and about,
yes,
we want to put on the happiest, best face, you yes. know? And we especially do that in church. And what's really funny is that when I first started coming to this church, I had decided that I was done with doing that. And so when people would be like, oh, hi, how are you? I'd be like, well, let me tell you.
Wait, no way.
Oh, yes.
Did she do that to you?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I felt like everybody was like, oh, wow, she's got a lot of issues. Well, remember, I wasn't going to be your friend.
Uh-huh. She was very resistant to being my friend.
Mm-hmm. Because everybody always wants to be friends with the pastor's wife or the pastor. And so I was like, I'm not going to be that person. I am not going to be the person.
You know.
I know.
And I would wear you down.
And then I get to know her, and I'm like, okay, I cannot not be friends with this person. We're too much alike, and I love her too much, and so I have to be her friend.
Oh,
so
God.
Anyway, yeah, I was being a little rebellious.
So but, did you feel like you fell back into that, make you being a people pleaser, or no?
I think I just kind of go through peaks and valleys where, where I'm... One day, I am just like, who cares what people think? And yeah, you want to know how I'm feeling? Let me just tell you. And then other days, I'm like, oh, everything's so fine and everything's perfect.
And isn't that reality, though?
But it is, yes. And I'm sorry, but there are some people that I don't want them to know that my life is really not doing so
well.
Or
you just don't feel like getting into it. You
don't.
I never did.
I'm not going to cast my pearls before swine.
I don't want to.
Exactly. You don't want to get into it.
I don't want to get into it.
Way to throw that reference in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's just been a big thing for me is like just be real. Just be enough. I am enough. And be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, love others. And I think there's room enough for everybody.
Yes.
There's room enough for everyone's gifts. And if I start to think that I am being jealous mm-hmm. of someone... Then I start to unpack it. Why?
Yes.
Why am I feeling jealous of this person? Why? You know, what do I want? What do I want that they have?
Mm-hmm.
And why is that so important to me right now?
That's so powerful what you said, though, about how, you know, there is enough for everyone. Because I think there is that lie that, and I don't even know where it comes from subliminally or how it's portrayed to us through, I don't know, is it through marketing or through NFL cheerleaders? I don't know. But it's like that, you know, that there is this certain standard that you have to meet. Like, you have to spend 2 hours on your makeup. And if you do, that's fine. But, you know, if you, mm-hmm. like, you have to have a certain appearance and you have to have a certain Instagram feed. Like, it has to all be color matched and all that. And
you're really good at that, Beth, though.
No,
you're great at your stuff.
No, you have to understand there are people, and it's fine if you do, but there are people who you look through their feed and everything's like a certain color and all that. I don't have a gift for that, and I'm like, that seems like it would take too much time and too much energy.
They can do it for
but
me.
But people do, and they take a lot of time and energy, and that's fine, but I think they're going to get down the road and think, I wasted a lot of time on that, because I've gotten down the road and thought, I wasted a lot of time staging my life to you know, to avoid criticism from others, or, you know, like if I take a picture, I have to do it in a certain part of my house that is not messy, and usually the front door where there's nothing else.
Yes.
And, you know, because you just don't want to open yourself up to people saying, oh my gosh, did you see all that clutter in the corner?
Yes.
Did you, whatever. And so, yeah, there's a difference between presenting yourself authentically and presenting yourself in a way that does not represent you. It represents a reflection of society and of what everyone's striving for.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
And so I'd rather see someone messy that's really them than someone super polished that's just being a reflection of the world.
Well, and you know what that does? That encourages and invites others to be that way too.
Mm-hmm.
When I see you being vulnerable and when I see you being okay with your dishes on the sink,
mm-hmm.
that allows me to be that way too.
Don't follow my lead there. Wash your dishes, girl. I'm like, Aaron really needs to go ahead and get his degree because I need him to start cleaning my kitchen again. Anyway.
Tracy, hurry up with that. I love what you both said. Spurring others on not to
somebody's
be
somebody's
got to
be a leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you said, staging my life, how that affects others. I think that when you say wonderful things like that, let's stop and think about that for a minute. How many of us are staging our life to keep up with other people on their Facebook? It's true.
Yes.
It's true.
How many of us stage our life to keep up with someone that we might admire and we so desperately want, like you had said, we are transferring our relationship with Christ to be like this other person instead of finding our value in Him. Tracy had said something about jealousy, and then you had said something about staging. So what if we did this? What if us three women started a new revolution and it was staging our lives to look like Christ at no matter if we're PMSing that day? And or if our kids are driving us bananas and one of them told us that they were thinking about having sex before marriage and you wanted to strangle them. And how can our life be staged? And I'm going to ask you, how can we stage it to look like Christ even in the midst of those turmoils? Because my son is very pushes the envelope, which I love about him, but he also pushes it in a way that I morally and integrally challenges me as a mother. And I like what Beth said. Mm. She wants her daughter to look beautiful when she goes out, and so the world will accept her. I get that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I totally get that. And I think you're smart to do that because they're going to beat you up anyways.
Mm-hmm. They will judge your appearance.
They
yeah.
do. Mm-hmm. And you just want her to get, you're going to get the hits.
She's beautiful. Let's get you less I just hits. Want her to show
yeah.
that.
But less hits. She is beautiful. but she's beautiful in her heart, and that was the most beautiful
yes.
part about her. So I wonder how I stage my life. The most important people in my life are my kids, of course. But when I walk outside the door, how does my life look staged? If I don't have enough money to pay the bills, am I still going to be able to show Christ when I'm struggling? Mm. If my relationship with my husband is struggling, or I'm wanting to have a child and I can't, how is my life going to reflect Christ when our lives could be crappy? Mm-hmm. How do we do that? Past the jealousy, past not girls not all liking us, how can we stand up for Christ when we're a mess?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe today I'm a mess, but you can't tell, but inside I could be a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you don't feel good and you could be a mess. But
yeah.
so how do we stage our lives to be Christ? I know we're all going through this, but there's a way we can do it. And I like that book that says you have to let go and honor Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go to you, Beth. What do you think, how you could stage your life? If you could stage it in a perfect way, or maybe you had a perfect scenario that actually happened and you had a crazy day, but you were still able to push through your emotions, push through jealousy, push. You had a crappy day, but you were still able to, hey, you see Christ in me. And I know you did because I pushed through it. Because that's hard to push through.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I do. I really strive to not stage my life but I think the flip side of that is that sometimes our transparency can become a persona as well. Like our transparency becomes fake. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like we want to be so super transparent that, you know, it's forced almost. And so I take days where I just kind of disappear from society, I disappear from social media, I disappear from people, and I have to just kind of recenter myself. And I try to be careful not to kind of live for the likes or live for the comments.
That's hard.
But it is.
That's so hard.
Yeah, it's fun. It's interaction. It's, you know, and I'm an introverted extrovert. And so for me, that's a more safe way of interacting with people. I don't have to be all up in their
yes.
face. I can
yes.
still interact, but I'm in my pajamas at home.
Beth, that's one of the greatest things that I see in you. And then you have such asset for women to hear is because not only are you real, and you said sometimes transparency becomes fakeness.
Yeah.
But your whole goal is to make people see Christ and really know Him through your walk, through your dirty dishes.
I hope so, yeah.
And to let people know that I'm a pastor's wife. But yet, I'm a mess, and I'm not going to have a clean kitchen all the time. But I love God.
Forever.
Mm-hmm. And so what mm-hmm. I want to do now, Tracy, answer that to how you can have a good life, even though you're trying to show Christ, even though you have a mess.
Mm-hmm.
She showed an incredible example. Then we're going to go to our dreams, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. So think about your dreams that you're mm-hmm. working for towards mm-hmm. now in your
okay.
life.
Well, I think
if that's okay.
It's really about, you know, how can I still, even though I'm struggling, how can I still care for others? And because I think when you get outside of yourself and yeah, we're all going through something. We're all struggling. When my daughter moved to Australia to go to school, mm-hmm. it was one of the hardest things that I've ever gone through. And I, for the first 3 months, I was a hot mess.
Yes.
There was no bones about
it. And that's
it.
Okay.
Yes. And that's the thing is I was kind of letting myself go through, you know, letting myself feel it.
Yes.
And not pushing it aside and going, you know, oh, no, I'm fine.
Oh, no, I'm fine.
My daughter's away. Yeah.
God's my strength.
Yeah, exactly. No, gosh darn it. This is upsetting.
It hurts.
Sure, she was your best buddy.
Yes, I mean, she...
And then you can walk with Beth in a couple years.
Yes.
Through it.
Yes.
Oh, yes,
I need you.
And it's like, really, Australia? Could we not go farther? Because that's just way too far. Sorry, I'm being sarcastic. But that's just how I felt. But what I realized, and I did, I just shut down. I really feel like I shut down and I just went through the motions. But and I realized that I was a little upset with God about it.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Ooh, girl.
And he made me realize it. And he's patient and he helped me just kind of get to that point. Do you really want to hear the story of how I discovered it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? Of
yes.
course.
So we were at youth and beautiful Abby was singing a song, and in it it talks about, you know, how you're basically just giving it, you know, I'm giving you everything. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you everything. And I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the Lord was saying to me, it was like right in that moment, no, you really don't. Ooh. You don't trust me with this. You don't. You really
he called
don't.
You out.
Mm-hmm. He did call me out, and it was like a shock to my system. It was like, what?
Oh.
Is that true? Really? I don't. I don't trust you in this. And it's it really hit me hard, and I cried, and I realized in that moment that I wasn't surrendering everything to him.
It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was super hard. It was very hard, and I don't know what it's something about our daughters. It's like, I think daughters are, girls
yeah,
are
I
just
agree
special.
With you. They
and
are.
Boys are, I mean, I love my
no,
boys.
No, you're right.
And they're awesome. There's something about the daughters. There's
I agree.
Something about them, and we have to really, I think women and you know, women and girls, and we all need to realize how special we are.
Yeah.
That we are unique, and that we are thought up. You know, by
yes.
our Heavenly Father to be just these, to be beautiful.
To be gifts.
Yeah. And we are. I think we are a gift to the world. And so it's
and
very, yes, yes. And it's very evident to see how we can all be such a mess and not reaching our potential because we're so enveloped in all of our hurt and all of our pain.
Oh,
and we can't
that's
help
good.
Others, you know.
I think two really important things that you said, first of all, that you allowed yourself that time, like you were hurting and it sucked. It was mm-hmm. awful and terrible. But instead of just putting on that mask and so, I mean, I do see the value in the claiming it, like professing with your
yes.
mouth the things that are not as though they were. I do see the value in that. But I also see the value sometimes in just saying, I am hurting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not okay. This feels terrible. I need you, God,
oh,
to heal me
mm-hmm.
and work me through this. And so you were hurting, but you were like, I know it's going to be okay eventually,
yes.
but right now it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was so powerful. And the other thing that you said, and I wish people could just understand this. You said, I was so depressed. I was feeling myself getting very depressed, and you had a decision to make. I can either stay in this or I can make a choice. And the way you got out of that was saying, how can I help?
Well, there's a scripture in the Bible that says you overcome evil by doing good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's, to me, that's you overcome your depression by getting
mm-hmm.
out there and serving others. It really does help. I mean, getting out there and showing the light that you have to somebody else. I know that's how I do it.
Yes.
If I'm having a bad day, I will take a basket full of goodies to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just do it. I will go and people need kindness, and it is an incredible
yes.
force to
yes.
give to someone who is hurting. And that's and I think that's great. And that's when you dove right into your youth group. I love
yes.
that you said that.
Mm-hmm.
You said, I love the great example when you said, I'm either going to be haphazard and do my ministry halfway, or I'm going to be all in.
Mm-hmm.
All in looks so much better than
yeah.
halfway.
Mm-hmm.
And people can tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell the difference when you're doing something 100%,
mm-hmm.
even in your regular jobs, or even in your relationships. And then when you're doing it 100% and giving all that you got, and then God honors that, and then he blesses it, and then things happen.
Yes.
Right. When you do things 100%, absolutely. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was great. So I want to finish up here with dreams. I want to leave us with giving hope. This has been fantastic, guys. Beth and Tracy have been amazing. I want us to think about our dreams, and I want to start with myself. So I'm Stephanie Williams, and God has been so incredible to me. I want to talk to the ladies who've had dreams and have given up. So I want you to walk with this journey with me about the dreams that God has given me. Number one, God is absolutely incredible. And he has a dream for everyone listening. If you're walking in your school right now, or you're on the bus, or you're a mom who just got off a third shift and she's exhausted, God has a dream for you. God has a big dream and he's given it to you. And sometimes we keep him down because we become moms, which is great. But now it might be a season in your life to pick it up again, but you're afraid. And Tracy had said that fear kept her from doing so many things until one day she said, and still sometimes we all still struggle with that, but there's a difference with struggling and still going forward than struggling and staying still.
That's right.
So I had a dream as a kid. I was very super heavy, and I was made fun of most of my young teenage life because I was so heavy. I was made fun at home, and I was made fun at school, brutally bad too, almost where I wanted to commit suicide, and I had tried to commit suicide because I wasn't accepted. I found Christ when I was 14, and after that day, I was forever changed. And one day, God and I believe that when God teams up and gives you a dream, you work together mm-hmm. on that dream. God gives That's it to right. you, and then together, you hold each other's hands, and he guides you through it. But he doesn't promise that it'll be easy. So what he and I decided to do is I started to work out, exercise. I didn't do it to be the skinniest girl in the room or because the bullies were mean to me. I did it because God had given me a dream. And I had this dream when I was probably 18 years old, and God told me, you're going to be an aerobics instructor, and it was the furthest thing from my mind. I never wanted to exercise. I hated to exercise. So if you've had a dream in your heart you think there's no way I can do, or nor do I want to do it, I don't see it, ask God, pray, and see what he has for you. So one day I became obedient, and I said, okay, God, what do you want me to do? I'd exercise, I'd lost weight to be healthy, plus I wanted to honor God. And when you come to fall in love with Jesus, his desires become your desires. And let me tell you, if you will listen to the dream he gives you, it births so many other dreams you can't even imagine. So me and God hooked up together, and one day I got fit, and because I wanted to, and I wanted to be healthy. But he said, I want you to be a Pilates instructor. And I said, God, I don't even know what that is. And I went to Ross, and I got a video. It was like $9.99 or something. It wasn't even an expensive video, but because I loved him, and I knew his voice, and I knew he had a dream for me. Sometimes we have to look beyond the life that we've been given, mm-hmm. dream beyond the life that we've been given, and see okay. that he has a big plan for us. Sometimes we can't see it because we listen to the voice of others. But Beth and Miss Tracy have told us, don't listen to the people around you. Listen to God. Mm-hmm. And when God gives you a dream, listen to this. Do not team up and think you have to get an organization to let you know if this is really God. I know some people get a dream. They go, I got to go. I got to get a group of people to make sure this is what God says. Two or one people, that's fine that you trust. But you don't got to get a team because they'll talk you out of your dream. And some people will tell you you can't do it.
That's right.
So when I became I went and got the Pilates tape and I trained and I told my husband, I said, honey, I have no idea what being a Pilates instructor is, but I love God. I heard his voice. I'm going to honor him. And let me tell you, it was way out of any kind of schools or any kind of tool I had. I had to take these tests. I hate taking tests. And I did it. And I thought, okay, I did it now. What do I do? And God says, I want you to go to this gym, and I want you to tell me you got a Pilates, and you're a Pilates instructor. And I was terribly terrified that no one ever hired me. But see, God gave me a dream, and I believed him. So I followed that dream, and I went to a gym that gave me a job that day, which is unheard of as an instructor. They usually drill you. I got that job, and I remember walking into my first class of 25 people. I called my husband. I went into the restroom. My son was 3 years old. I put him in the little daycare, and I had the diarrhea because I was so nervous. And I said, God, how could this be? There's 25 people in that room. I'm nobody. I'm the girl that was called fat and ugly all through high school, wanted to commit suicide. But see, I fell in love with a father who gave me a dream, and I refused to give up. And everyone around me told me I couldn't do it. All my siblings, no one said I could do it. But see, you know what? God has made a steel. And when we serve him, we become like him. So I became made of steel, and I chose to believe him no matter what all the naysayers said. So I went into that class, and it was full of 25 people, and the Lord told me this. He said, I want you to own that room. Don't be afraid. own that room. You know what you've studied and did it. So I did, and it was, oh my gosh, when I got done, I walked out of that room, I called my husband, and I bawled in the car. I just bawled. No one knew in that classroom. That was the only class I've ever taught, my first time ever. From there, I became one of the highest paid aerobics instructors in that district. People would pay me $75 an hour to $1,000. That's unheard of, because see, I believed that the dream that God gave me, and he is so good. From that dream, I've got to speak to thousands of students in high school. From that dream, they hired me at the schools because I was an aerobics instructor. Because of that dream, I've got to touch other lives. I know it was very hard for me to share this story, but God said, I want you to share the story. I don't like anything to be about me, but I want everything to be about him. Some of you young ladies and women have dreams you've given up on, and I don't want you to give up. I was the fat girl who thought she could never be an aerobics instructor, farthest thing from her mind. But God knows, and if you team up with him, he will give you a dream that's bigger than you can imagine, and he'll keep giving you more and more dreams. So I believe in you. If no one else has told you today, I, Stephanie Williams, Tracy Smith, we believe in you and the potential and the purpose that God has given you. I need you to find it. So Miss Beth's going to tell you a dream that she has, and so is Tracy.
Well, mine's not quite so decisive. I'm a worship leader, and I absolutely love doing that, and I want to continue doing that as long as God will allow me to. I'm a wife and a mother, and I'm very happy being both of those. But I think I'm just committed to connecting women with their passions and their callings.
Yes.
I hate to see women think that they serve no purpose. It hurts me for them. It irritates me.
Yes.
It upsets me. It unsettles me, and I can't stand for it, because I believe, I really truly believe, that every single person, but I'm specifically, I think, geared towards women, every single woman has something very, very purposeful,
yes,
very specific,
yes,
that the reason she's on this earth.
Absolutely.
And so often we think, well, because I'm not that, I'm not anything. But it can be so seemingly small to the world, but it's so huge to God and to his kingdom. Basically, just releasing women in their freedom to be powerful, capable, unshackled by fear, whatever it is, just to love themselves and to love others.
So that's your dream.
It's very ambiguous, but that's just what I like to do.
That's fantastic. And you do it. And the thing about it is, when women have dreams, young ladies and women have dreams, they go after them. You know, I don't want to ever sit in a room with, like you said, you want to inspire her. You want to hook her up with someone that can help her with their dream. That's what you said.
Mm-hmm.
That's like God told me once. He said, Steph, there's no greater gift than seeing your friend become the person they need to be in Christ.
Right.
And you got to be a little part of that. That's an incredible blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's fantastic.
It's wonderful.
What do you got, Tracy?
I want to just encourage women myself, because, you know, I came from just feeling so down on myself, feeling so little, feeling so small, feeling like I had nothing to contribute, and not having confidence in myself. And I don't ever want anyone to feel that way.
It feels awful.
It's awful. It is so
it's
awful.
It's unnecessary, too.
It is. It is unnecessary. And, you know, I know that my dreams are valid, you know, that God has put them in my heart for a reason. And I have to, you know, I have to take myself out of the equation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, you know what? I've got these things that I have I've lived through. I've got these things that I have experienced. And if I can take those things and use them to help others,
yes,
then I've got to stop being so consumed with myself and how I'm going to look and how I'm going to, you know, how I'm going to be perceived. And I have to do the right thing. And because that's what I was doing. I was putting myself in a place where I can't do this. I can't. Who am I? Who am I? I don't have the education. I don't have this. I don't have that. But I do have something.
Yes, you do.
And it's coming to that realization and really believing in myself. It really has everything to do with believing in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, hey, that's where I'm at now. I want to be able to believe in myself enough that I can convey and, you know, and tell other women that, hey, you have You, every single one of you has something to contribute. Don't ever think that you don't.
Right.
And that's what's important to me.
I love that.
That's fantastic.
It's beautiful.
Well, I want to end with, I always like to give tools. So I would like to give three books the girls can read. I'll give one because I believe that tools are the answer. Number one, of course, is the Bible. Mm-hmm. The Bible is our answer. It is our reason. It is everything. The Bible says that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have the Word to sustain us and give us hope. We also have books that can encourage us our walk of Christ. You two have said a lot of them. One that helps me, Stephanie, the book that really inspires me right now is Chase the Lion. And it is an incredible book. Mark
Batterson.
Mark Batterson. And it's so funny because we all read books that really are our personalities. Mm-hmm. You ever notice that? Mm-hmm. Like, I've never read any of your girly books, ever. But I write all the emotion stuff. I'm like, wow, I would cry the whole time I read those books because I would be so like, this is so me. I can totally identify. But the Mark Patterson book is so incredible because it's about if you have a dream to go after it with a vengeance, knowing that God, you chase that line, you go get it and don't let anyone talk you out of it because God has a great plan. So I want you to try to get that book and we'd love to discuss it when we get back. What do you got, Beth?
Well, can I do two?
Yes.
Because the one that I would like for everyone to read is Without Rival by Lisa Bevere. And we've already talked about this in private. Stephanie doesn't like female authors, but that's so chauvinistic.
It is. I'm wrong. You're right.
But this is an incredible,
tell us why. I love
your
story.
It's an incredible book because it combats comparison, the comparison trap. And it really illuminates why we are important, why as individuals mm-hmm. that God created us so specifically with an entire plan in mind, and we don't have to be like anyone else, and that's a trap, and that's death, really. And so it's just a very life-giving book. It's an empowering book, inspiring, and but I do want to say, if there's anyone out there listening and you're in ministry and you're a woman, I highly, highly recommend this Emotionally Healthy Spirituality for Women. It's by, I think her name, Gina Scazzaro, I think is her name. I'll edit on our Facebook page if that's wrong. Scazzaro is the last name. But if you just Google on Amazon, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality for Women, so, so important that we are emotionally healthy. And we can't be our best spiritually if we're emotionally unhealthy. And so I think just finding that center and finding that confidence and just an assurance in ourselves and in our God. So I would highly, now there's parts of it because it was written a while back, probably in the early 2000s. It's a little, there's a little bit of it that's a little cookie cutter, but just push past that and just really get to the meat of it. It's invaluable.
Mm-hmm. Mine would be The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown. And it's not Brené with an R, it's B.
B-R-E-N-E. Brené. Accent.
Yes, exactly. That book is really good. And then she's got several.
She's amazing.
So she's, yeah, it's great.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to end with prayer. And Tracy and Beth, you were incredible. And it has been an honor to sit in your living room. It has been an honor to sit in your classroom. It's been an honor to sit in your bathtub, taking a bubble bath. Girls like that stuff.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know.
Oh, while you're getting ready.
Getting ready for the day. It has been an honor. And we want to leave you with this. We need you to know, if no one else tells you, that you do matter. Don't let anyone tell you don't. And that your life matters and that your heart matters so much to us, mm-hmm. but so much more to God. So let's finish in prayer.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
All right, Lord, just thank you so much for this opportunity to record this today. I thank you for my friends. And I pray, Lord, that just whoever's listening today, that they will be inspired and encouraged. And that you're just working in our lives. And we just give you all the glory in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.